Welcome back, y'all. Afro Movie Review is back with season seven.
Welcome back.
By the time this drops, it will be AMR's second birthday, so fitting. Not like by the time this episode drops, but in this season.
So it's coming up.
Welcome back, y'all, to season seven, episode 79. The voices that you're hearing are Mo, she, her pronouns, Afro Movie Reviewer, the coffee head right now. The chocolate chip podcaster.
I'm Keek, stay them pronouns. Afro Movie Reviewer, your favorite trans podcaster. Season seven.
Yes. Air horns. Yes. So we are very excited for this season because this is the women directed it season, which means every movie in this season.
Women. I'm very excited.
Very, very. So let's get into it. We already did a rock, paper, scissors, Keeks one. So they are going to start off. They are going to start it off.
That one is start. Okay. December 16th, the UN reverses the ruling that Zionism is racism by 111-25 vote with 13 abstaining.
We need to shout out them 25. Like, yeah, y'all knew something.
Them 13, we need to talk to.
But the 111? Beat a mass. Beat a mass.
So the original ruling was a year after the resolution recognizing the question of Palestine and inviting the Palestine Liberation Organization to join the international diplomacy as an observer. And it was sponsored by the Arab League and many Muslim majority countries. So this 1975 decision was revoked, by Daddy Bush. And he said in a statement, among other bullshit things, that Zionism is racism. Saying Zionism is racism mocks this pledge and the principles upon which the UN is founded. And I was like, what is
the principles of the UN founded on?
And I'm like, what y'all stand for? A quick Wikipedia search says y'all supposed to be maintaining international peace and security, protecting human rights, delivering humanitarian aid, promoting sustainable development, and upholding international laws. And I'm like, well, y'all don't even do that. So what are we doing here? Like, why?
What's up?
It's just a very thin line between oppressed and the oppressors. And the UN is headed by the oppressors. Japan, UK, America, Italy. They did something. That, look, niggas don't just be speaking Italian outside of Italy for nothing.
For no reason. Okay, well, my first fact is going to Janet Jackson. March 11th, very good day. March 11th, Janet Jackson signs to a $40 million 3-album deal with Virgin Records. At the time, it was the largest amount of money offered to any signer on Virgin Records. Initially, it was a one-album $15 million deal, and then auction jumped that deal up to $25 million. And she gave us Janet, 1993, which has That's the Way Love Goes, If, Again, Anytime, Anyplace, and You Want This, which is an uncelebrated bop. Get into her. And then she gave us The Velvet Rope, 1997. And prior to its release, she renegotiated her contract with Virgin for $80 million, marking this as the largest recording contract in history at that time. The Velvet Rope album has Together Again, Go Deep, Gone Till It's Gone, My Burn, Velvet Rope, the song. It's, yeah, yeah. I told you that was my first concert experience.
Mm-hmm.
Baby. Yes. And then she gave us All For You, 2001. All For You, I believe, is on the Clumps. Is it The Clumps or is it the original Nutty Professor? I'm not sure, but it's on one of those soundtracks. And then Someone to Call My Lover and Son of a Gun, which is the Carly Simon sample that has Missy Elliott on it. Mm-hmm. So that's my first fact.
Yes. Can you imagine, like, niggas fighting over you so much that it raised your value? $40 million?
An auction? They auctioned. Girl. They said, Janet was like, I'd really like to join Virgin. And everybody else was like, yeah, we heard what you said, but we would still like you over here and we will pay you more money.
They're offering $15 million. $25 million.
Okay. And they, Virgin said, I raise you.
Three albums for 40.
Richard Branson, also he's the head of Virgin Records, but he also had Virgin Mobile. He has Virgin Voyages now. Richard Branson has his hand in a lot of things, and he wrote, he like blogged about the experience of signing Janet Jackson, and he said it was one of the funnest things he had ever done. He said that as the sexiest record label out at the time, he wasn't going to let the sexiest artist pass him by. He
Hell yeah.
recognized a bad bitch when he seen her. She already had a couple of albums under her belt, but then she ended up staying with Virgin Records for 17 years.
I mean, I would too. Shit, they take care of me. I'll
They
take
take
care of
care,
you.
they took care of that artist. They took care of
Right.
that artist. In between Janet and Velvet Rope, she released Design of a Decade, 1986 to 1990, 1996. Which was just to fulfill her other her other obligation, and it was like a compilation of the songs that she had done that were the tops from her other albums. That's one of my favorite albums. Like that bitch goes in. Get
Yes.
into Design of a Decade. But anyways, that's my first fact.
My second fact is short and sweet.
Okay.
September 10th, the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee begins hearing on Clarence Thomas' nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. Top five worst things that happened to Black people in the U.S. right after slavery and Reagan, but before Biden and the crack epidemic. Ain't nothing worse than a fucking job nigger with the decision-making power of the Supreme Court. I cannot wait to put something on the grill for
Smoking that
him.
Clarence Pack,
Yep,
Thomas
I wouldn't mention
Nair.
it,
Imagine the fucking bags that are coming out of the little novelty stores. Oh,
that's gonna be
that's
a
gonna be
fun
a good
time.
day. Be a good day. Okay, so then my second fact, I'm also going to go short and sweet. March 19th, 1991, NFL owners strip Phoenix of the 1993 Super Bowl game due to Arizona not recognizing the federal holiday that is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Only thing I got to say about that is, when did NFL owners stop caring about Black lives? Apparently 1992 or some shit, because what the fuck's up? That's it. In your face.
Oh gosh. Okay. My last fact is April 17th, the railroad workers in the U.S. go on strike. The way I had to fight tooth, nail, and claws to find information about this goddamn thing, we could thank three presidents for it. We could thank all of these presidents for this, but three presidents had like a major hand in it. It was Jimmy Carter, who we always was like, oh, that's the good president. Like, no, you're going to Christian hell too. Reagan. He know what he did. That's why
You
he
know
set
what
up
he
the
did?
foundation. Like, Reagan, because everything is Reagan's fault.
Everything.
And Daddy Bush. So Jimmy Carter passed the Staggers Act that highly deregulated the railroad system. Reagan and his administration changed the game and how things was operated at the time. They was like, oh, so we getting deregulated. Okay, well, job cuts, then we cut in all of these railroad tracks, and then we just making the distance shorter with these shortcuts, and then we're not gonna pay out you workers because I know you worked on this and I get that, but we already sold this to another company, so we're not responsible for that shit. You need to go after them
For your payment.
for your payment. And then Reagan also had a committee set up that allowed them to intervene into strikes for railroad strikes because of the good of the economy. And also set a precedent that was like, yeah, we're not doing collective bargaining where if the railroads merge, we have to honor it anymore. That's not going to be a thing. So. And I didn't know that railroads had to pay themselves, like for every mile of track that they lay in the property tax on every mile. I don't know why I thought they were owned by the state and the government, the federal government, like highways or interstates. And I was like, ooh,
They're
okay.
not.
Or not. So, and
Wow.
apparently that was because in 1920s, the rail labor movement was like, they was like, we need to be under government control. Like, y'all can keep doing this to us. And the railroad industry was like, no. And they won because they're assholes. So Reagan happened. Mind you, this is the 80s. Reagan happened. Daddy Bush came in. Daddy Bush came in and he was the president during the 1991 strike. The very first thing that I found when looking up this, it was like, they went on strike by 11 p.m. Not only the House of Representatives, but the Senate had a decision. They said, we're going to draft a bill to make sure you cannot do this. They woke up Daddy Bush out his sleep at 1:39 in the morning and said, sign this. The economy's at stake, my nigga. I said, excuse me. If they wanted to, they will.
Yes,
it okay? is. So very, very interesting. Because I was like, y'all just had a strike. Like, y'all be doing this regularly?
The fuck's up? Like, y'all just be striking regularly and not coming to any possible decisions.
It's hard out here. Like, nigga.
Wow. Because all of what the train's been fucking up lately, I thought that it was a government failure. It is. But it's like the privatization like of it. Yeah. Wow.
Corporations gonna corporate. Like, bitch.
That's it. Ooh. Okay. Watch for that. Because I was just considering taking Amtrak more because the plane's been fucking up.
Look, and I'm scared of the planes falling out the sky, but now I gotta worry about the planes. I'm like,
Where do I go? Don't go anywhere. Go nowhere.
The traffic is fucked up.
Did you see that they made a little transport thing between like the US and Ireland where like they had like this.
Why the fuck would we need to go to?
It's a visual thing. So people are like seeing each other. And they already cut it off because some girl in New York City like showed her titties and the all of Ireland was on the other side like, great American boobs. Like.
Oh God. We can't have shit. But, like, also, why? That seems so dystopian. Like, all your rights are getting taken away, but here, portal to Ireland.
A portal to visual Ireland and anybody
like,
who's standing there.
I don't need that.
I don't. I would really like universal health care.
Like, I'm struggling. I can't afford rent, my nigga.
I can't. Woo. What the fuck's up? Oh my god. Okay. Well, I'm ending a little bit lighter. January 12th, 1991, goes to watch the Atlantic Coast women's basketball game. In attendance, there were 11,520 people. This is a college basketball conference, and again, keyword women's college conference. Mm-hmm. Now, this is notable because just this year, 2023-2024 season, we had 13,100 people who showed up for the title game between South Carolina and LSU. This is the draw out between Angel Reese and LSU and Caitlin Clark. That girl. Yeah. Caitlin Clark had her WNBA debut. She had her WNBA debut and she had the most turnovers ever documented in a WNBA debut.
Okay, I'm not a sports gay.
What does that mean?
Is that bad? That means
like I tried to pass you the ball and somebody stole it, or I tried to pass you the ball and it bounced out, or I tried, you know what I'm saying?
And fuck I can't even play sports, but I know how to throw a ball to another player
on my team.
Like what?
Passed it and it was somebody else. You know what I'm saying? Something like that. Those are turnovers.
And this is the first time I've seen a second place winner get so much attention. Like, bitch, you a loser. Like,
yes,
you lost. Yes. Like, get over it.
But it is kind of, it just to put this in perspective, because that was 1991. Again, 11,520 people went to the game. This year, 2023-2024, we have the national championship that delivered 18.9 million viewers. This is the most viewed women's college basketball game on record and the most viewed college basketball game for men or women ever on ESPN's platforms.
I think she's a pretty cool cat. So
they called her the Bayou Barbie, and I was like, how cute is that nickname? Adorable. And she's from Baltimore. She be talking her shit. I love a shit talking ass athlete. I really do.
Honestly, that's half the game.
That's what sports is for.
Talk your shit, nigga.
Talk your shit.
Hope nobody push you off that.
Back that shit up. Back it up. And she does. Iowa and South Carolina became the second most watched non-Olympic women's sport ever on U.S. television behind the 2015 Women's World Cup Final. Ooh. Come on now. And then we had Game 3 of the NCAA Finals that averaged 13.8 million viewers. That's the most on record. So ending there because we have the women directed it season. And I think that the women are just... We are seeing some beautiful things. Started with Janet and all that money, and Angel Reese and LSU and all them bad bitches. And like Caitlin Clark is probably going to get her feel into the game, but a lot of those WNBA players was waiting for her to step on the court because she was talking hot shit in NCAA. And they were like, okay, step on professional. Come on, girl. Cause she got all them endorsements. She did get all of that publicity as a loser. Second place right. is the first place loser. So I think there was a lot.
Like, come on.
I think a lot of people were waiting for her to join, and she's there now, and it's going to be interesting to watch. So
I'll try to make my facts more women focused for the next. I forgot.
You don't have to.
I would like to, though, because I do remember saying something that was like, oh, women are now allowed to be air flight combat pilots. And I'm like,
as of 1991, it was probably Desert Storm. And then they said, bye. We scared. We need help.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people. So that was our history reel. Yeah, we are going to get into the lenses of the season. Keith, would you like to start with yours, or you want me to start with mine?
I hope you start with yours.
So my lenses for the season, my left lens is a half circle, kind of like a bowl. The right lens is a full circle. They are both brown tinted lenses. And it is, you know, copper wiring when people like twist it and like make stuff out of it. Mm-hmm. The bridge and the legs are made of copper wiring. So the copper wiring goes through. It's a continuous one piece that's been done all designed and stuff, right? Yeah. And it cuts through the lens on the left because it is a bowl and there is a raised dot in the middle. It goes all the way through the right, raised dot on the middle as well. And those represent our areolas. And then we have penises hanging from the arms by the balls.
Hilarious. I'm so glad.
What do your lenses look like?
My lenses are these very thin round lenses that like stack on each other going downwards. And they go about mid-cheek. And they move as one unit, though. But the bottom one is like an areola and a nipple. And the nose bridge is a Sankofa symbol. So it's like sagging titties with like a nose bridge tattoo of some Sankofa.
I love titty supremacy
in this bitch. They'd be like, oh, I don't like titties that sag. Bitch, you don't like gravity?
Yes, tube saw titties. I will explain that later on in the season. Okay, y'all. So we haven't done this in a while either. If you want to let us know what your lenses look like or a directed...
They keep emailing us shit.
Don't email us bullshit if it's not your lenses.
So if you want to know our email, we'll let you know later.
Go to the website.
Keith, listen to the earlier episodes.
I give
the emails to my phone too. Like then I be like, who the fuck?
Who signed us up for this cruise?
And the answers got real fast. Like what?
Okay, my bad. Don't email us. No, all right, y'all. Then, well, the plug for this season is take care of yourself, take care of others, be community. Right? Yeah. Show up as community. Show up as friend, as lover, as family, as action words. These are action verbs. These are things that you do.
And not just things that you say. Misogyny and misogyny noir.
Boom. Let's get into the review of the movie. Yes. Daughters of the Dust is directed by one and only Julie Dash. We decided to start this season with this movie because it is the first independent film written, directed, and produced by a Black woman.
First feature
film directed by an African-American woman to be theatrically released in the United States. The year was 1991.
I'm tired of hearing half of the 90s.
Alive. Not all the half. But that's a long time ago, long enough for this not to be their first.
30-something years ago. Which is still too recent. Like, too recent. What?
So, should we do the synopsis first?
Yes. I have a languid, impressionistic story of three generations of Gullah women living on the South Carolina Sea Islands in 1902.
Okay. What was your ranking of this movie?
I give it an 8.
An 8 flat?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a very beautiful... movie was so gorgeous. I can't wait to talk about it.
I gave this movie an 8.75, and it was probably for the same reason. This is probably the most visually stunning movie that we have seen.
Yes. She is a very... What are your categories?
My categories are visuals with an exclamation point, very much a la Beyonce, where the fuck are they? History slash culture. Beauty is their name. I have, whew, because I was going to tear up. It's going to tear up. And then I have hair with multiple exclamation points. And oh, it's beef is my last one. What are your categories?
So I have Yas. I have one of those. I have the ancestry, smart directorial choices, and I have LOL. I was so absorbed with like watching and like absorbing the content that I was just like, okay, these are the choices we're going to fit in there and then whatever we're just going to talk about. So
because it was great to really just watch it. There was so much that was given to us. The history and culture was immediately after visuals because visually the shot, the directorial decision he making made
so much the clouds, the moving of the cloud. First off, I love how the storytelling wasn't linear, and sometimes that can get confusing for some people,
but for Miss Julie Dash did it well.
It worked so well. So and then you had the clouds representing, like, it wasn't so much
the it was kind of
time, it was more like and I got that at first. I was like, because it was kind of non-linear, but you couldn't really tell because it was the future and the present and things like that. So I was like, I don't want to say passage of time, but more like, I don't know what I explain it. Like maybe
the connection and absence of time.
Possibly, because the way we as Black people see time is not linear. It is cyclical. Mm-hmm. So it could be in that instance of like, because it does reminisce of like, oh, a day starting and a newing again. So it was,
Then for this to be a single day's interaction, we don't go into a nighttime. So this is this very long day.
Yes.
Anytime that we came into a space on Daughter Island, it seemed like we were giving, if you were paying attention, you were being given so much. The wicker chairs.
Yes.
The carved sticks. The
Moncala.
The Moncala. Like just little things. And you Moncala? Know. I said, boy, hold on, because that's a nigga game. That's a real nigga game. If you don't know how to play Moncala, I know you didn't play outside enough. Yeah, somebody in the neighborhood had one. That's an outside game, and like the connection of it,
it's very,
because you know my favorite Moncala set,
look, it's so gorgeous. But even like the transition, like when she made some very smart directorial choices. So when Nana was
Nana Pezant.
Yes, I forgot their last name that fast. When Nana Pezant was holding on to Eli at the beginning, and she was like, you got to take something with you. And it was transitioning from the girls that were on the beach, and it was like she was holding the girls in her hand in the transition.
Visually. There was so much that Julie Dash was able to do. And I want to point out now that Daughters of the Dust had a budget of $800,000.
That's not a lot.
And like, we could do the 1991 translation to 2024, what it looks like, but it doesn't matter because even it doesn't. And because of the fact that it was that little amount of money, what she was able to create visually.
That little amount of money is.
There was no outfit changes.
And you can, the way you caught that this was a Sunday, right? Did you catch that?
And
the way they're all in white, the way they're sitting there gathering. I was like, this is a Sunday.
This is a Sunday.
They're gathering on a Sunday.
And Viola knew to come on a Sunday so that she could. Everybody knew they were going to leave anyway. But the fact that she wanted to capture that with Mr. Sneed and the family leaving, knowing that they would be in their Sunday's best. And they were also going to be having this big ass meal and doing all of that. This is the time to capture those images. I did not peep. Thank you.
I was
for
like,
that.
Because when I tell you the ancestry is just full of like, culture, ooh, culture. I know that. And it was just, and I was like, oh my God, we're all in our Sunday best. We're gathering for the last time. And it is a beautiful moment. Now, I did not understand why, let me point out first that I love the way that even though Yellow Mary was visiting, she was in white too.
She knew what it was. And that lets me know that it probably was a Sunday and this is tradition for the people, because how did she know? Right. And she brought Tula which I thought was her daughter. She bought Tula in the closest thing to white that she could. She wore yellow.
That was her lover.
Yes. Was it?
Did you not notice at the end when she was leaving? First off, no. When they were talking about staying, and when Nana Pazant was like, oh, you got to merge the old with the new, and she had her locket of hairs with her and her grandma.
Oh, I cried.
On the Bible, and she was like, oh, you got to kiss the Bible. That was when Tula ran away because she
I noticed
her lover was not coming with her. And then that longing look, oh my God.
And the way she turned away, I even wrote, like, Tula, where are you going? Well, I understand that you don't know it, but the fact, because when they were smoking reefer up in the tree, I was like, she be smoking with her mama. Like, I didn't have no judgment because, you know, I'm from California and a lot of people smoke with their mama. But I just said,
even mentioned in that scene, she was like, I had a baby, the baby died, but I have milk in my teeth, so I had to go.
And I thought that she was ruined because of that, but she said, I stopped the milk, and that she was already ruined, and then she made decisions on how to live her life. It would make sense that Tula is her lover. But then it was also the fact that Eula is a name on the island, and she found a woman named Tula. I thought, because they did a description and an explanation of the names, which I also just thought were so beautiful, because it went from like these names that were, I don't know, so much meaning and so much depth to the individual person. And then they went even back further with the name and like referencing it. And all of a sudden you have Orisha names and God names that are being given to these people on Earth. Oh,
that was, and that part I love, because they were like, oh, you changed, you just renamed our old gods. And like, you get these new gods names. And it's like, these are all one and the same. And you just don't.
And we always are going to live this double life. And I was like, yo, this movie, at first when I was watching it, I was ashamed that this was my first time watching it all the way through. Same,
because I was like, I can't believe I have not watched this all the way yet.
Because I've seen it in clips maybe, but it was always a PBS or like a something that was being given to me. Like if you didn't catch it in the beginning, it was always in the middle. And so I've seen clips of this. I've seen shots of it. And then also when Beyonce did, I'm assuming, Lemonade, people brought this back. It was highly
inspired by this.
And it referenced it. So there was I've seen clips, and maybe not just in me trying to seek it out in a movie experience, but in social media where they were trying to give this person who does do a lot of work in referencing and reverence. She gave a nod to Julie Dash, who is still alive. Yes. And was able, you know what I mean? So, but I got out of being ashamed with the development of the story, because I was able to see how me being shamed because somebody else had seen or had gotten information first was going to limit my experience. And that is part of what was happening, right? Is that Viola, who had already been on the island, I mean, who had already been off of the island, was coming back, and she has given up the old religion. She's given up all of that, and she's coming back and trying to convince her family, who's already going to the mainland, trying to convince them to give up something in a way that would shame them because she knew it first.
Me annoyed me, no lie.
Viola, I literally have a line that says, Viola, shut the fuck up. Because, and I have one for like, Hagar too.
Yes, I don't like the way they denigrated their past just because they saw this like new hope in the north. And they kept saying saltwater Negroes. And I was like, I'll saltwater your Negro. Like,
and it was very much a disparaging, like, it was so
derogatory. Yes. And I'm like, what's wrong with being saltwater Negroes? But
and then when Iona.
Yes, the one who's with, she has
Saint Julian.
St. Julian last child, which I want to bring. I was like, when I saw them, I said, oh. Not African indigenous people and Turtle Island indigenous people working together.
And I
saw from Twitter, there is a creator called at Dr. Black Deer, and she has a framework called BLISS, which stands for Black Liberation and Indigenous Sovereignty Solidarity.
Thank you for that plug.
I was like, oh my God.
Because niggas love to say, oh, I'm mixed with Indians. Some of us are.
Are, but
most of us are not. And that's okay.
Like, it's okay. But at first I was like, oh, okay. Because I was like, oh, he's helping them, like, pool things with his card and things like that. And I was like, oh, they in a relationship. They started kissing us. I was like, oh, it's like that.
Yes. And the fact that this was set in 1902, we are saying, and Viola makes reference of the fact that we're about 50 years past slavery. There was so much that I was able to get from this that I felt was directly a history and cultural lesson for Black people in a way of reconnecting with self, especially because right now there's like this reclamation of older things. Not even just with like the white women who are wanting to go back to being housewives and not wanting to have any like responsibilities or just not wanting to work, whatever, right? Not that superficial shit. On a deeper level, a lot of Black people are going back into traditional African religions and going into religions that I'm not going to say by name, because if you didn't catch the names that we dropped earlier,
then you're not just going to catch it.
But and I'm not, and I don't want to gatekeep it in that way, but I don't want to drop it. Right. In a way,
it's not
that
for everybody.
Yeah. And that's so if you're inspired to find it and to search for it on your own, you will. Especially after watching this movie, you would.
And did you get that so they also had Muslim in it, and they had Christianity in it, and then they had the African traditional religion. And I just love that because I was raised Southern Baptist. Our beliefs cannot be contained in just one book or just one belief like that. We were not originally monotheistic. So I love the melding of that, because it is like we do have Black people in our lineage that are Muslim. We do have Black people in our lineage that are Christians, and we do have Black people in our lineage that are of an ATR. So I love the melding of that. And it was,
and I loved the fact that at the end hated the fact that at the end Viola was able to
come to pay terms reverence. With that. She was like, okay, because she was very much in the, because she pissed me off when she was like, it ain't right, old people supposed to die. And I was like, girl.
Is this your great grandma? You mad because she's still alive? I was very like conflicted. Like,
girl. And so
what's up?
She finally kissed the book. Because I think she was also influenced a lot by Hagar, so because Hagar was the one that's like, oh, them things ain't gonna work, ain't gonna change nothing. And I was like, to you, babes, if you don't know how to work it, then that's your problem.
And mind you, Hagar was married into this
family.
And Viola said something about that too. She was married in, just like there was one other person who was married in. And so it was very interesting the way that she had decided. Eula. Was it Eula?
Because Eli's grandmother was Nana Pazant.
That's it. Nana Pazant. So it was interesting to me the way that she had this, like, oh, well, she could just stay because she didn't have that same tie and association, the love bond that everybody else had. But when Nana said, like, you take this and you kiss this and these, I protect you out there.
Right. Let me tell you, the references to the people flying home and Eli walking on that water. I do feel a type of way where Bilal was like, I was there and, you know, they didn't fly home.
It didn't happen like that.
Look. And he was like, oh, like that, like, to you again. Like, and
but I, you know what?
He was firsthand account, but also babes.
But I think that's the power of spoken storytelling. Right. And like Nana Pazant said, like, the African griot gets to tell this story in a way that there are going to be people who will tell the story different, but the motivation will be different. Right. Mm-hmm. So for Bilal, his keeping of his language, or because he said, I haven't spoken that language since I got off that. But the last time I did that, you know what I'm saying? There was a cutoff of him. And I don't know if it was to reverence, to keep it or whatever. But like for everybody else to have this fanatical or like, not fanatical, but this kind of like romanticized version of something that for him was probably the hardest experience of his life.
Yeah.
He has a different perspective, right? Yeah. Doesn't change the fact that on the other side of the island, his people that he knows and love are still telling the story in a romanticized way.
And honestly, both, you can, if you have to find a way to hold both truths as true. And I love the beginning of this and how she was like, oh, I'm the wife and the virgin, the first and the last. I love a both and kind of girl. Be able to hold both of those truths and just sit in that. Sit in your contradictions.
And the fact that the story was told from this unborn child, the baby had not even been brought to life yet and understood the power of her, the wind blowing. And because Nana had been doing all of that work, she knew that her child, you know, that her family was leaving. And the fact that the men referenced the wind blowing off of the ocean as fresh as sweet baby's breath. I mean, there was just so much in this movie. Question, was there anything for you that you disliked?
That I disliked? The struggle between Odin knew the language that they used a lot was varied. I think that is the most thing that I disliked, because they was calling them savages. And then even, and I was wondering about Yellow Mary for a moment there, because I was like, yes, you're from here, but then you come back and then you call them savages, and you talk about Igbo landing like that. Like, did you really want to be there, or is it because?
And it was I think it was comparable to what we saw in Lady Bird, where you can't hate a place, right? And if with Tula being her lover and not her daughter, she had spoken about this place as a woman who had all of these experiences, even when she was saying she was leaving, they're like, we're going to Nova Scotia. Right. As Black queer people, you know what I'm saying? So she's leaving the ability to separate herself from something that was in the way that she described it with her lover beneath her. And when she got there, she figured out that was all that she needed. She needed to know that she could come back to a place and be loved the way that she was loved in that place, and could not go. So it was very interesting. My only thing was with, and of course this was with having already watched the movie and then doing the review or doing the research for it, the accents. I was so confused on the variation of accent. I have heard from other people that some Gullah,
it's supposed to be Gullah Creole.
And that's the thing. So I've heard that the Gullah Geechee Creole mix can sound very Caribbean at times, but this one was very Caribbean leaning. And then when I looked it up, none of the actors are from Geechee areas. Even Miss Julie Dash is, I don't want to lie because I didn't see where she's from. But like Yellow Mary is played by Barbara O. Jones, who just passed away this year, April 16th. She's from Dayton, Ohio. Eula is played by Alva Rogers. She's from New York. She's still alive and doing her thing. Absolutely. Shout out to her. Nana Pazant was from.
I didn't get her from, but I did get, I didn't get her from. She was born. She was born 1914.
Baby, and she did a lot of work. She was also a jazz singer, which was very cool. Hagar
Anderson, who was Eli, was from LA.
Mm-hmm. Hagar is from Kansas City, Missouri. That's Casey Moore. And then, I was confused about the accents, and that affected my ranking afterwards. I gave it a 9 and I took it down to an 8.75 because I was like, oh shit. So, my during the movie watching, and being confused by the accent was valid. I think the only time that the accent was truest to Geechee accent was when they had the words pop up at the bottom. I think that was the truest of accents.
No lie.
You know, I watch everything with captions.
True. But I think they did mention in the casting, yes, they hired a mix of union and non-union member for her crew, with the later being cast for their familiarity with the Gullah language, which the main would have to learn. So
there was effort put into it, though.
Yes.
Okay. I love that. And so with a budget of $800,000, that's something that they were able to do, was able to honor the actual language that they were referencing with people from the area that speak the language to come and be on set, which meant they were probably paid so that the movie could give accuracy.
They had a dialect coach. Can we talk about Julie Dash? She is very well connected.
Come on now.
That's also another thing. American filmmaker, music video, commercial director, author, website producer. She got her master's in fine arts in 1985 at the UCLA Film School and is a member of the LA Rebellion.
So the LA Rebellion is the first African and African American students who studied film at UCLA, and there's a group of them, right? Was it Hagar? I believe so. Hagar is one of those, is one of the members of the LA Rebellion too. So she was pulling people from her group, her crew, to make sure that she could pull them up as well. Which is awesome to me. She made sure, but she did the work. Like, Julie Dash made sure she did the work to be able to do this. Beyond there, she's still doing the work. She's still making sure that the things that she's doing are impactful. When she decided she was going to touch on, because even her other movies that she's done.
Yes. Oh, can I mention Adisa Anderson was also part of the LA Rebellion.
Yes, he was, the guy who plays Eli Pazant. And he is also doing the work, okay? Because he's a storyteller, educator, producer, and actor. He still does these things. He serves as the director of Queens Historical Society since its inception in 1989.
Founded by his wife, Sakara Thomas, his late wife. Rest in peace. So
come on now. So it just was like Julie Dash... the effort that was put in with the budget that was given for the impact that it gave.
It was. And you mentioned where you felt less ashamed. I felt less ashamed when I was noticed. I was like, oh, this is for me. Because I was like, oh, culture. Oh, ancestry. No matter how long it takes you to watch something.
Or to get the information that gives you culture and history and ancestry or whatever it is that you're learning.
I was like, oh, this is a movie I should sit and just watch and appreciate. It doesn't matter that I got here late. It just matters that I got here.
And I will.
The Uncle Spike Nard. The way my herbalist heart was just so happy. Like,
what is Spike Nard?
Spike Nard is an herb that I actually have seeds that I'm actually growing out.
So that could be enough because he lived on the riverbank. He got away from, he was like, when they freed the Africans, he said, I will stay right here next to the water. I think that it was just, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And for this to be the first movie directed by a Black woman that was released theatrically, like, which means you could go to a theater and see it. For it to be 1991, they made $1.6 million revenue. They doubled that shit back.
That was,
What a wonderful, impactful movie. Miss Julie Dash, we give you your flowers right now. Miss Barbara O. Jones, I'm not going to apologize that I wasn't able to give you your flowers in real time, because it turns out that the impact of you has transcended. And I was able to get it in other ways. So we also want to give it to you. That $1.6 million ain't no ho. The production company was Geechee Girls. Which I thought was...
That is adorable.
Give it to the home crew, right? American Playhouse. And then we have Warner Music Group, which is very interesting because we were talking about Virgin having its, like, things. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that Warner... I knew that Warner had a music group and had a... What did y'all have to do with this? Probably the music, the drums, the...
Yeah, the... Man, that music... I want the soundtrack. This was very... home.
I loved it. I was emotional. What were your ticks for your categories?
Yas had 7. One of those had 12. The ancestry had 12. I had to stop counting the ancestry. I was like, baby, just watch. Smart directorial choices had 5, and LOL had 2, but only because of that old ass equipment. I said, look at that old ass camera and that heavy ass suitcase you lugging.
Yo, the little pop or whatever, that was cool. I thought it was cool as shit how you could, like, they were fanning themselves off and complaining about the gnats. And one of the shots, Mr. Sneeds is standing there and there's gnats all around. And you could see them. So that, like, stuff like that, I just appreciated the fuck out of it because it was cohesive in the story. Like, I love that.
Mr. Sneed seemed more like an anthropologist than he did a photographer. And I love that about him because he was very, even with Violet, like, disparaging them, he was very like, I want to go see this. I want to talk to these people.
I want to know.
Even if he didn't believe, even though he saw, because he saw in the picture the unborn child.
He saw the unborn child. He came out and said.
And he still didn't believe. He knew of the wonder-working magic. So I...
liked it. Okay, all right. I counted, and when I tell you, I was probably because I was crying, so I was actively like, and not like sobbing crying where it's like distracting or you can't do, but I just was like tearing up, like, this, it Okay.
This was a very beautiful movie.
It was. So visuals had 27.
Oof.
There
I
were so many
believe
times that I
look,
was moved by what I was seeing on the
the way
screen.
I just couldn't, I couldn't do nothing but just watch it and be like,
I'm
oh
gonna
my
watch
God.
this often, and not
Yeah.
necessarily to cry, but mostly when I want to see something visually appealing, when I want something that's not, because we last season we were talking about how we were tired of white women coming of age stories. When I need something opposing of that fucking energy, I'm going to Daughters of the Dust. Because it really did something for me. History and Culture has the same 27, but I realized that not every time that I was visually stunned by something on screen was I getting history or culture. So these are separate, they are separate times, which to me was awesome. Nothing else has given me that experience yet. Beauty Is Their Name was 15 because of some of it was just the fact that there was just beautiful black
They were
people.
so chocolate and so pretty, and I
Oh, they
loved
were
it. I loved it so much.
so great. Whew, had 16 because yeah. Hair had 5 and Oh, It's Beef had 10.
I do want to change my ranking to an 8.5. The way I literally
Okay.
watched this, and I was like, I don't know how to feel about this, but I liked it. And it was just the way I was just so overcome with emotion, and I was like,
It
I
was
don't know if I could
art,
give a proper ranking.
baby.
So
I don't
I'm
know how to
still even
feel.
like deliberating the ranking and be like, should I go up? I don't think. I mean, because there's not a lot I didn't like about this.
There wasn't. I don't have
So.
any real complaints about this movie. It was, I think, the only complaint that I had, the only one was, what was it?
Aside from the
No,
language.
yeah, I think it was the language, and I think that Viola and Hagar having this like Viola coming back with her like white man colonizer, everybody needs to be a Christian thing was interesting. It pissed me off coming from Hagar because she had not made it off the island, and but I had to come to understanding where she was coming from later. She hasn't been nowhere. She's married into here, and she literally yelled at the island, "I don't care what happens, I won't die on this land." I had to recognize her as a person who wanted more than what, you know what I'm saying? She wanted more
To
for herself.
abandon all that you know, like you can want more for yourself, but take it with you
Yeah, because she was like, we
in
don't
that
need that
way.
there. We gonna have gardens, we gonna have vegetables. And I was like, all of those things were provided for you on this land. And when they did the flashback to Nana and her husband, when they were trying to figure out how they would make that possible on that land, the work that your people have done for you to get here, for you to disparage them like that, was it that?
Disrespectful is what it was. I do
But
have
you need character, didn't you?
something on Violet. She was an American actress. She had 5 nominations for the Joseph Jefferson Award for Actress. She had 2 for supporting actress, 2 for main actress, and 1 for mid-sized play director. She has a 2013 NAACP Theater Award for Best Supporting Female for The Convert. And her daughter is the current U.S. Representative for California's 37th Congressional District,
Go
City
off.
Amlinger Dove. So very, very, she plays the fuck out of that. Like she was a very complex character, because
He
I do get in
was.
the end she did end up like accepting it. And I do feel like she's one of the people that actually, I don't want to say she took it with her to the north, but she, it gave her something to chew on.
It did. It did, and I cannot be upset about like you needed that story as well. The only other person that I want to shout out real quick is Eartha Robinson, who played Myonna, just because that she is gorgeous. Myonna was the one who was like, I seen it when she came on Ebo Landing. I was helping her look for a parasail. She is beautiful. Eartha Robinson is a dancer. And if you search for her, if you put in Myonna Pesant, but then put in it comes up Eartha Robinson, the picture that they have from her is probably from Studio 54, and that leg is bow
Oh
in
my
the air.
God.
She's gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. She was also in Malcolm X. She was in Dodgeball, A True Underdog Story. She was in La La Land in 2016 because dancer. So she's still doing things. These are people who are around for you to be able to love on, appreciate, give their flowers to. And I think what a wonderful way for us to start this season. Our combined ranking is an 8.625, which is not one of the weirder of the numbers, so we can keep it as that out of 10. IMDb gave this a 6.7 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes gave this a 94%. It's very interesting because
IMDb gave it a what?
a 94%.
Okay.
It's one of the few times, this movie is one of the few times that critics across the board agreed it was wonderful. It's been put in as one of the
Library of Congress film registry.
greatest movies of all times. Like it's in there. And that was also part of the reason why I was shamed, because I felt like, oh dang, we haven't. But this
I
has
mean,
been.
Miracle on 34th Street is in the Library of Congress.
Come on now. Y'all not
And
gonna
we
shame me about
honestly should
that.
do a season, so
Of
of
just that.
look, Library of Congress film registry, which I've got in there, and does it deserve to be in there?
Movies, but like this specifically, we just thought what a wonderful way to open up the season. And I'm grateful that we did, especially during this time for us personally. I'm very grateful.
This was, oh my God, this was everything I needed. I
And
can't
I'm
wait to
not
go
gonna
back and just
cry.
watch it. Look, because I was the way I was tearing up at the end, I was like, oh my God, she
Those
never
hues
moving.
was every that 16 was every time I teared up looking at something. Looking at, hearing at, whatever, the message that was intended was delivered and received in the time that I needed it. I
And that's the
appreciate
same. I
Miss Julie
adore
Dash.
so much. So
Whew.
much. Oh my God.
So before I start crying on this hoe, we're gonna get up out of here. That was episode 79. Because this is a women directed season, we could do a jump around guest like we did for A24. But what
I
do you
think we should. Like, y'all don't need to. Women directed it. Go look up women directors, because I doubt y'all do. So,
And there's a good amount to pull from and play with. I'm
right.
excited
So,
for the season.
because man, I can't wait till we do a second season. There's so much to do.
There's so much.
Oh
So, all right, y'all. Thanks for hanging in. It wasn't as much of a break because we did things properly because we're professionals.
my God. Yeah, professionals. Lips hair.
All right, y'all. That's it. That's us.
Thank you guys for tuning in. Love you guys.
Hey, cards, little
Bye.
hearts.